This week's episode has no paid subscriber, so go to thedadpodcast.com and become a paid subscriber. Do it if you love your children. It's Father's Day. You know you want to. Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast, episode number 96. Back again, been too long, Mr. Tom Hewitt, my hero, is here with us again. For anybody who doesn't remember, Tom is most notably known for his unbelievably kind email and his experiences going through renovating his house after Hurricane Sandy decided to tear the living shit out of it. And my favorite part, if anybody who is a new listener, please go back and listen to the first episode with Tom, because the man is single-handedly rebuilding his house. And of course, Mike, all married men, his wife is like, doesn't really care. I mean, I know on some level, I'm using hyperbole here, that on some level she does appreciate it, but not enough to overcome the take-for-grantedness of marriage, right? Like,
that's the truth.
Oh, Mr. Hewitt, let's talk about what's going on in our lives. I'll, of course, go first because I'm narcissistic that way.
Okay.
I got this gig, as I've said on the show, that I'm trying to get off the road, kind of get into radio. I'm going to be wholeheartedly honest that the response to the show, while I appreciate the response in paid subscribership, has not been enough to support me getting off the road. So I'm like, all right, so clearly this is something that people want for free, and I'm okay with that. I hope it doesn't sound bitter, that it is just a joke. I'm not genuinely bitter about it. I understand. I wish it was different. I'm not going to lie. But so I started looking around for radio jobs, and what I found is, which is interesting, I am somebody who has made his living being funny. Like, that's kind of my thing. So I put together what they call an air check or a demo for radio, where you know, it's little stories and stuff that I've done on radio appearances all over the country on morning shows and stuff. And I've submitted to be a sidekick on a morning show on multiple places. The only jobs, though, that I've gotten responses from are just radio guy. So that what they're casting me off of is only what I found is the tone of my voice. And I thought, that's weird. One guy, though, offered me a job in Ludington, Michigan to do afternoons on his radio station. And he was like, what's it going to cost to get you to move from L.A. to Ludington, Michigan? And nothing against Ludington, Michigan. But I said, I cannot leave because my wife's job is here. And I'll be honest, it's not going to be enough to support. I've got a greater chance of supporting myself off of this podcast than going to do afternoons on this small station. But he was like, one of the things he said was, he goes, you know what I like? You had the best presentation out of everybody that submitted. He said, you know, it's not really funny, but it's uplifting. And I was like, and so I was like,
oh, then I'll be a priest.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was like. I go, I guess. Thank you. I'm not sure. But it was a weird, I found out from a radio guy that I know here that it's Chris Booker that I do the other podcast right. with. Justin's uh-huh. married, Booker is single. And he said, he goes, what he's trying to say is that you're not trying to be funny. He goes, all the radio guys, he goes, they're like the old school vaudeville comics where it's like nothing but one-liners and they're trying to make everything into a joke. Whereas you can tell a story and make it funny and interesting, not, you know, you're not always going for the joke. I was like, okay, I hope that's what it meant because that's a nice spin on it. That makes me feel okay. But anyway.
He's maybe being overly your friend.
Yes. Maybe. Here's the thing. He has given me some pretty harsh criticism, so I don't know. I think I believe him. He's not a go out of your way to be kind person. I hope that I just gave him a backhanded compliment, I think.
Right. Now, can't you do a radio show in Michigan from LA now with all the technology?
Yes.
It seems like you could be Tokyo Rose for crying out loud.
That's exactly what's happening. So I'm about to be the Tuesdays. It's a weird thing, this radio thing I found, and we'll get into parenting here a little bit later. I'm sorry if I'm waxing poetic, but it's just because this is all I've been doing to the point where I'm almost neglecting my family, and that's why I kind of wanted to chat with you about it, is that I'm going to be the afternoon or the Tuesday guy on KERR-FM in Vermont. That's going to be a terrestrial radio station. Right now, I do what they call the overnights, which is 7 p.m. to 12 a.m. on an internet-based alternative rock station called alternativeradio.us. If you want to listen to me, it's only me talking for like 15, 30 seconds at a time. It's a new thing that I think they're just putting like on-air talent, but it's called voice tracking, where everything is, in a sense, pre-recorded. So, yes, I could do afternoons from here, but and I said, I have ISDN, but the guy said, I want you to be here. I want you to be here and in Ludington so that because like there's things you have
going
to know.
Going through the records, putting the vinyl on.
No, that's the thing.
The needle on the right thing.
Yeah, that's not even radio anymore. That's what I didn't understand. But he also told me there's a thing called an ISDN, which is no different than Skype. It's an old, old version of Skype that they now only use in radio. It's completely archaic. Like, if you call to try and get your own ISDN line, you have to, like, find the right person to talk to at AT&T. Not ISDN RS. No, you have to, like, AT&T, right. A corporate communications, you know, giant juggernaut.
Our last guy retired last week.
Exactly. It's pretty much that. Like, there's a special phone that you have to call, and then there's only, like, 8 people that know what you're talking about. It was really weird. But yeah, they have what they call an ISDN, and you can, and it sounds like I'm there. So if anybody who is a fan of me in Omaha, I also do a weekly segment on CD 105.9 on Steve King's morning show there in Omaha, Nebraska, and I call in. And when you listen, it's in a sense I'm calling over a phone line, but the way this ISDN thing, it sounds like I'm there and I'm in the studio. It sounds really nice. So I have one of those, but he's like, we don't have a receiver on our end to where you could even do that. So now I'm doing this voice tracking thing for alternativeradio.us, and I don't want this to sound like a bag on them. This was the part of the gig that they had out there. It's an unpaid position. So I do a 5-hour radio show every night, but it's all – I'm essentially talking for 10 minutes total during that 5 hours. But
all right.
I got to tell you, Tom, for a guy who talks for a living, this is taxing. Oh, my gosh. It is really – I know this sounds like a big asshole move, but it's really hard, to be honest. Like, the first show I did was Monday the 26th. It, no joke, took me 3.5 hours to put together the tracks and figure out how to do it all. Now I've got it down to where I could do a show in about 1.5 hours, and that's only 10 minutes of time. Like, it takes me an hour and a half.
But it's free.
It's absolutely free. It's absolutely free.
You're not getting paid either, right?
No, not at all. And so the idea being is that it will give me something on my resume saying that I've worked on an alternative station before. And so right. I might be able to, you know, it's a ladder. Just like in stand-up, you start off as the guy who's the host, the first guy you see, and then you work your way up the ladder to where you're the middle guy, which is me at most of the clubs. And then you work your way up to headlining eventually. And that's where, you know, that's kind of the top. And then from headlining, you get, you know, sitcoms and movies and, you know what I mean? And then you work your way up to theaters. It's no different than any gig. You have to work your way up from the bottom. So I'm going to try and see if I can't get on the alternative station here in LA doing like where I'll have to be in the studio from like midnight to 5 a.m. until the morning show comes on, or over the weekend. Those are like the bottom of the rung type shifts where you go in and then you can work your way up the ladder from there. But I really enjoy it. It's just, it's hard. Like, that's why the reason I'm telling this whole thing is that normally I come in here and it's like, I've got 85 things to talk about, but I'm going to be honest. I'm almost talked out, Tom Hewitt. I am almost.
Oh, all right. Everybody put your glasses down.
Yeah.
I'll be playing the Justin drinking game today.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you know about the Justin drinking game?
I have no idea about the Justin drinking game.
Yeah, every time you say, for me, you have to take a drink.
Do I say that a lot?
Yeah, a little bit.
Please, Tom, don't hold back. This is funny for me. This is probably almost as funny for me as it is for the listeners. Like, I think that here's what you get to be. You get to be the guy who comes on the show and says what everybody else is thinking when they listen to me freaking diarrhea the mouth the whole time. Like, Paco comes on here and he always loves to joke about how he never gets to get a word in edgewise.
So that's not true. He does plenty of talk.
That's right. That son of a bitch. So I say a lot of for me. Is that what I?
Yeah. Well, you know, somebody will be talking about something. You'll be like, well, for me, how it goes is, and then my Justin imitation is awful, but
I like it. I like it already.
One day you were on a roll one day. I forget which episode it was where I heard it a lot. And I was like, oh, this could be a great drinking game.
I know. That is good. All right. Well, there we go. Here's the thing. If you listen to the show in the morning, then you take a sip of coffee. But if you're like, this is your wind down time, you sit down with a glass of wine, you plug in the earbuds while the kids kids are watching, you know, Sprout and that Nina chick with the stuffed star. And then you, every time I say for me, you take a sip of wine. Before you know it, it's nighty night time. You're going to sleep when the kids are. You get a full night.
Turning down the lights. Why is it every time you listen to that podcast? Well, honey, are you sure it's just about parenting?
It's also a sleep aid. That's what I'm going to make business cards.
No, I was saying after the wine, getting a little frisky.
Trust me. That and the wine. The wine and the show will also be a sleep aid.
Oh, okay.
So that is everything. Like, I go, I pick up the kids from school. I hang out with them in the afternoon while I make dinner. And then my wife comes home, and then I put dinner on the table. Sometimes I eat, and then I immediately go out to my studio. And I start, you know, tracking the show, start laying it down and try to get it done as much as possible. So I'm already done through Friday, but I'm enjoying it. And that's enough talk about me. Let's hear from you, Tom Hewitt. What's going on?
Seems like the hard part about, just to say one more thing. Anytime I have to sit down to a chair and I'm not getting paid for it, I'm like, just forget it.
It's hard. And I have never been that guy. I mean, now, my wife said the same thing. She's like, well, will it ever be a paid position? I go, someplace else, maybe. And here's the thing. I don't want to make these guys are giving me a tremendous opportunity. It's like going to radio college is what it is that they're saying, here's the thing. We're an internet, you know, radio station. The music is what people are tuning in for. They're not tuning in for you. So we're going to let you come on and kind of, you know, bump your head against the wall and figure things out and stumble and fall on our radio station. And the catch is, we're not going to pay you to learn. We're just going to do it because they're probably not making a ton of money either. I mean, they've got some advertisers, but it's not like they're raking in millions and I'm sitting here struggling. I think they're probably working.
A kid could do a radio station from his bedroom now.
Exactly.
Too.
Exactly. And it's only two or three guys that are running this whole thing. And one of them even does the morning show. So I think that, you know, they're working even harder than I am trying to make ends meet, and they're giving me this shot to learn. And I kept telling myself when I was applying for this, I was like, well, I did a ton of free stand-up shows before I got to the point where I was making enough money. It took me, honest to God, it took me almost 7 years before I could make a living of doing stand-up. And the first two or three of that, I mean, I was getting paid to do shows, but I was breaking even by the time I paid for travel and food and stuff while I was there. Most of the shows I did, I lost money on, and that my wife was subsidizing my stand-up, which, of course, now kiboshes every argument I've ever had about, you know, me making money, putting in less hours.
Right. Let's go to the totals column. Here,
yeah, exactly. Well, I still think if you compare hours, I know that the Heather and Kate are going to love this. If you compare hours put in to paycheck come out, I still think I'm doing okay. Now, when I say that, this is what they misunderstood. They misunderstood it to mean that I am putting my wife down. That is not what's happening. What it is I am trying to muster up any kind of masculinity I have left in me and to say, no, I'm doing okay, guys. I'm really doing okay.
I'm bringing something in.
There's something. I'm not.
But the problem with that is that, you know, like we have this discussion in the house not greatly often because it is an odd thing. I'm like, you know, I have to be able to make my money in really small pockets and like really hitting it hard because – my son, you know, he has to be dropped off at school in the morning, and then he's in this weird pre-K Montessori thing where he is learning the Disney catalog. It's a whole another topic.
I want to talk about it. So after you finish this,
okay,
let's go
we'll
right
come back
into
to that.
That.
But then I have to take him to our local, like our public school pre-K in the afternoons. So anything I'm doing, it's in 3-hour shots. And I'm like, you know, if we want to do this and when we want to be here for our child and be able to do this kind of thing, then this is how I have to make the money.
Yeah.
And if he's sick, if we want someone to stay home, this is how we have to be able to do it.
Yeah.
So she's a teacher and she'll be like, well, you know, I just do my work and I come home and she has to do some work, but she's like, and then I make my check and I know it's coming. Whereas I'm like, I got to finish this up so that I could bill this person so that they could argue with me for 3 months about getting paid.
Yep.
You know, and it's all, you know, so she's like always frustrated with, you know, why is it so hard for you to get this money?
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's just how it goes if we want me flexible enough to raise our child, because otherwise, like, our dog can't handle it.
Yeah.
You know, the kid cannot be raised by our wolf.
Really? The dog doesn't help out with baby. There's so many videos now. You need a cat, like that cat that saved the boy from the dingo looking dog. That's what you need.
Yeah, our dog sleeps if you walk in the house. Here you go, burglars. There it is. Hey. I swear to God.
Hey, listen, while you're getting that TV, can you grab me a treat from the pantry? Right.
That would be almost how she would be.
That would be
she
awesome.
Straight to the treat counter, wags her tail. Like, let me show you something.
Let me show you something. Then go get the TV. All right, right now. Right. Just give me some of those bacon things, the strips. I don't know what they're called, but I love them. It's the same. It's funny that repairing boats is very similar to voiceover in that, although I don't really get in arguments, like everything is usually predetermined as far as price, but like I'm owed about $500 right now that I just have to sit around and wait for, you know, because they have clients that have to approve and then there might be adjustments to the script and they don't want to pay you because like I'm the kind of guy that you could pay me and I'll still
You're
do the work.
Again.
Oh, no. Did I lose you on Skype?
Hello. There you are. You're good. I got you. You there?
Yep. I said that what I was saying is that I'm the kind of guy that no matter, like, if you already paid me or not, I would still do the job just as fast, but not everybody is like that. So we live in a society where you have to wait till the job's completed before anybody gets paid because there are, you know, jack-offs out there that'll, you know, fix a boat and or be halfway through. And if they get a full paycheck, then they take their sweet-ass time. You know what I mean? They don't move on as quickly as possible kind of thing.
And that's what I do. Like, I'll finish a job and send them the invoice, but then they want to nitpick everything. And it's like, well, you know, if you buy something for a boat, it tends to be twice as much as if you bought it for your house. It might be the same exact thing. But and then some of the boats are made by manufacturers where they are the only ones that will supply the parts.
Yeah.
They're like, that'll be $500. You know, and it's just, there you are. You're stuck.
That's essentially what you are. You're a contractor, but for a boat. That's what.
Right.
And I had that experience when I bought this house, and the guy, you know, he was a very nice guy. He did great work and I appreciated it. But as I think with most situations with a contractor, if I'm on the purchasing end, like what happened to me is that I had these cabinet doors that I custom ordered and he said, they're going to be $500. And then he said, oh, to do this special thing, it's going to be $200. So I'm just going to paint them. I'm like, no, I'll pay the extra $200 to have it match the rest of the cabinets. He's like, okay, great. But then he neglected to tell me it's going to be $600 to mount them, like just to put hinges on them and put them in the door. And I was like, for $600, I could have figured that out. Like, are you kidding?
Right.
I assumed that the $500 wasn't just for the doors. Like, I was like,
right.
And if you want to throw an extra $300 to install them, sure, but six. But I was like, I'm not going to hassle with the guy. I'm not going to haggle him because I feel like that's his entire life. And ultimately, like, I look at it this way. I look at it, the overall scope of his work and what he did for me and the price comparatively to other, you know, things in the market. So it's like if he's doing it for, say, $1,000 less than what somebody else is and the work is just as good, and then all of a sudden he's like, oh, it's going to be $600 more, then I'm like, I'm still saving $400. Everything's fine.
Right.
To me, it all comes out in the wash. I'm sure that's how you wish all of your customers would react, yes?
Well, you know, I'll call and say, here's what's next, here's what happened here. And, you know, you never get good news with a boat. It's always something else.
Yeah.
But everything I do is with a handshake. And, you know, I've never drawn up a contract or anything like that. You know, it's the benefit of being a small business.
Yeah.
And it's just when it comes to it, some people, they, you know, can throw the money around and say, yeah, no problem, no problem, no problem. But once you've added it all up, they're like, whoa, wait a minute. And then you have to walk them through it. And they're like, well, I don't have that right now. I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
You know, and I do them for some schools because I do rowing shells, you know, and all the colleges and high schools have these programs. And sometimes they just, I don't think that they know even how what to do with a bill when they get it anymore. It's, it's crazy.
That's awesome. Well, let's get a quick update on how things are going with your house, and then I want to talk about the Montessori pre-K school.
Okay. Well, the house is pretty much done. There's a few things that I just have not – once you're in the house, it's over. You know, I have my son crawling on my shoulder the second I pull out a toolbox. He's like, oh, let's go. What are we doing? Yeah. And something I could have gotten done in an afternoon is not even started, which I'm sure you know how that is. But the next thing that we have to do now, according to our insurance and the township, is we have to raise our house 6 feet.
What?
Yeah. What? Apparently you blast through – there's a bunch of houses already that have started doing it. They blast through the foundation. They put steel beams this way, that way, crisscross it all, and then they lift your house on jacks. Then you build the block underneath the raised house and set the house back down on block, basically.
I've seen them do this. There was at my I went to college at San Jose State, did not graduate because that's how I am. But they had an old house that was like on the original campus, and they use it as administrative offices. And to they had to do something, some foundation work. And so they literally, this one, they literally put on jacks. Like they could just crank it up. It almost, it looked like a different version of what you'd put under your car kind of thing. And they just spin it up and raise it up. And then they worked on the foundation, and then they just lower it back down. That's insanity.
Yeah, it's crazy. And the thing about this is, like, you know, I know engineers, and they're like, oh, we could do this. But there's some grants, and then your insurance, they want everyone insured and bonded that raises a house, because they're like, we, you know, this house is still insured. If that thing falls off one of your little steel beams there,
we're liable.
That's it. Yeah. And it's about $100,000 proposition when all is said and done. You have to reconnect your house to all the pipelines, the sewer lines, all that kind of stuff. You need architectural drawings.
And the city is making you do this because of the flood and all that stuff. They're trying to say, well, the next one, when Hurricane Mandy comes through,
the next big 100-year flood is going to wipe us out.
Yeah.
But the insurance companies are getting this, you know, it's a long, long thing, but they're basically, the leash is being taken off their necks. And it's, you're going to be allowed to increase the insurance so that you can make your money back when you pay out these insurance things, because FEMA wants out of it. FEMA's like, you know what? We no sooner send our people to one disaster than we're going to the Midwest and sending them to another. They're completely strapped and they can't do it anymore. So they're like, well, charge what you got to charge. So our flood insurance would go from $1,000, and in 5 or 6 years, they're talking it could be up as much as $10,000, which is half a year of our mortgage.
Yeah. Wow.
Already. So, you know, see ya.
And so the city
that prices you right out of the home. But if we raise it, the insurance is like $250 a year.
Oh, so it cuts it down.
Yeah, so it cuts it way down if you raise it, because they're like, well, you know, if you flood a bunch of cement blocks, who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we're fine with that. If you know, and anything you want to hold onto your house and store under your house, well, that's your problem.
And yeah. I don't know if I'm weighing too much in politically on this, because I don't necessarily think it should be their gig, but I'm shocked that the city isn't doing any kind of subsidy, or did I misunderstand that they are?
Well, the government is trying to do that. They're trying to do these programs. Well, they'll give you some money to help you do it. But what happens is, if the people in if the city has it done, then the city becomes like a low flood zone thing, and then they actually get tax breaks from the federal government. So if you've had more than 50% of the damage to your house, the city's like, you got to go up.
Yeah.
Because then it's just like no one wants to live in the city because we're all underwater.
Yes. It's Atlantis. You know? It's Atlantis, Jersey now.
Yeah, and you know, we still owe a chunk of change on the house, and to go up and put another $100,000 into it, it's just, you know, we're at the point of no return now. So even to sell it, we'd have to raise it, because if we don't raise it and someone comes along, they automatically get that $10,000 bump in insurance, and they're like, well, listen, we're going to have to raise it. It's going to cost $100,000, so why don't you take $100,000 off of your price, and, you know.
And it's not like $100,000. Like, if you put $100,000 into a house, chances are when you, on the market value, that's going to increase the value at least to $150,000. So you'll get your money back and then some, like on most renovations. But with this, it sounds like it really only makes your house sellable. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Now you're at square one.
Yeah.
Now you're at the price where you would get for your house, maybe.
Oh, Tom Hewitt.
It's crazy. Well, it is insane.
Kudos to you for, I don't know, maybe I'm speaking for you too much, but from just the way you're talking about it, the fact that you're not climbing to a bell tower, I think you have an amazing attitude about this whole thing, and just another reason why you are my hero, good sir.
Well, thank you. Yeah, there's days where, you know, and there's all this paperwork you've got to do with it, and my wife's like, have you done this yet? And I'm just like, you know what, I'm not in the mode this week where I can even think about it. And she's like, okay. Like, because she knows there are days you cannot think about the reality of it. Because if you do all the math, you're like, okay, pack the bag, walk away. Shh. Right. Don't tell anybody.
Yep.
We're not there anymore. They'll figure it out when they stop getting the checks.
We're moving to Puerto Rico, everybody.
That's right. Bring the Spanish dictionary. We're gone.
Yeah. My wife had a cousin that did that. I'm surprised it hasn't caught up with her yet. She didn't even leave the country. She just moved to Arkansas. Like, she just
same thing. Sorry, Arkansas people.
No, listen, I think we have one. I think we have one. I know we have somebody in Alabama, so I know they agree with you. But that, It's interesting though that she has it. This was almost 10 years ago and she still hasn't been nailed for it. Like just to walk away. I mean, that was also in the middle of the, oh wait, no, no, I'm sorry. My math is wrong. Cause I have children and years passed by in weeks. It was probably closer to 6 or 7 years. About
so
the time
been like right after the crash, right?
Right, like after the crash. Like that's why she did it. She did it because it crashed. She's like, well, screw this noise. And she just walked away from the house and left it there. And they didn't come after her for anything yet. But according to my
wife,
there's
a bunch of people that have done that around here already.
I could only imagine. Like that has to be what happens in these situations of disaster and stuff. That you know, people are like, ah, screw it. You know, come. And I'm always envious of those people. There was a guy I know, people that have, you know, purchased a house and then the market crashed and then they're like, you know what, screw that, and they go and they walk away from their house. And like the guy I bought my house from, he stopped paying his house in 2000, paying for his mortgage in 2010, continued to rent the place out, rent the house and where I have my studio in the back for the tune of, I'm guessing, $3,000 a month, and didn't pay his mortgage. Just
so he bought a new house.
He bought a new house, moved out, and then didn't pay his mortgage and collected $3,000 a month for 3 years, and then short sold it. So. No ding on him. And it's like when I tell people like that, there's always two my like kind of streams of thought, I guess, is that there's the thought that process that's like mine, that it's like, how could you sleep at night? Like that would make me feel horrible. And then there's the people that are like, good, fuck the banks. Like, you know,
right, exactly. Like,
and I don't know. What's
what is the movie where the guy says, God bless America and nobody else?
Yeah. I don't know. You know?
Like, that's totally what it is.
Cause it's like,
I got mine.
Well, and I'm trying to figure, cause, and I know I'm not educated in this, but that I feel like I would be freaking out because I feel like, right, we think that it's the bank that's getting hosed, but my mind tells me that it's the other people who happen to be associated with that bank that are really getting hosed, that it all trickles down. It's not like, you know, Mr. Bank of America is the one that's taking it in the balls. It's he's doing just fine, and it's everybody else that now has to pay an extra $3 a month on their checking account fees in order to offset that expense. Those are the people that are really paying for it. And that's the way my mind works. So that's why I couldn't do it.
I think you're right.
I made my bed, I'm going to lie in it. And that's the way you're supposed to do it. And unfortunately, not everybody's like that, in my opinion. But again, I know I'm an idiot when it comes to this. So let's get out of the things that I know nothing about. Yeah. Let's talk about things I am an expert at. Montessori pre-K school.
Disney catalog.
Yes.
Boy goes to this. You know, we put him in this a while ago, and it's you know, it's Montessori school pre-K for 2 to something year old. Mm-hmm. What happened was they changed the designation and they made it for infants as well because of some kind of weird political thing that happened with the people in the school. Mm-hmm. And now they're just completely overwhelmed and they don't know what to do. So no kidding, every time you walk in there, there's a video showing and or kids are playing on their like PlayStations and iPods. Wow. Like it's insane. And my kid, like, we're not sending you to school with that stuff.
Yeah.
But he comes home and he has seen every current Disney movie there is.
Yes.
You know, and he's like running around. He's like, I'm a, I can't even think of the name of the one-eyed yellow guys.
Oh, Mike. Oh, from Despicable, a minion.
Yeah, I'm a minion. And he's going, banana, banana. Like, just, and my wife and I are looking at each other like, I have no idea what's happening.
That's interesting. Are you the kind of parents that you don't like them to watch like PG movies? Do you stick to just G or?
You know what? We don't tend to see a lot of movies anyway. Uh-huh. But his thing is he doesn't sit down for a movie because he's terrified of them. Like we tried to show him movies early on and he's just like, no, turn it off, turn it off, turn it off. But because it's playing in the background at school, he'll slowly take it in.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he doesn't get the whole movie. He came home one day and he said, when do we leave the earth? When is it so dirty that we have to leave? Am I going to be alive? And it took like an hour of conversation with him. Like, what are you talking about? Where it was, he had seen Wall-E at school.
Yeah. It's like, why
can't, you know what? Not seeing this movie through to the end and not having the person there to talk him through it is really pretty damaging.
Yeah.
You know, it was crazy because he was like looking at me like, no, because there's so much trash and everything dies and then maybe one plant will live. And I'm like, one plant? Like, what are you talking about? Like,
see, it's interesting that people have such a lack of awareness to me because – if you look at it from, like, say you and I had our own preschool and we were, like you've already described, it's very empathetic of you to be like, they're clearly overwhelmed right now. They're in a process of rebuilding. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of games and movies. I'm not happy about it, but I'm also not going to start signing petitions online with the other parents to say, hey, get your shit in order. So it's like, but so if you and I were running the school, we would probably look at it like, oh, we're going to throw on some Wall-E. That's going to help us just deal with these other kids real quick. And but when you, when you're the parent, this is what they don't understand, is that now you're coming home and you're like, I realized recently how little I know about my kids because of what they do day to day. Like one of the parents was talking about, you know, oh, you know, if you look at his poop, like what they're eating and stuff. And I remember thinking that when I went to the doctor with both of my boys and I was the stay at home dad, that they would ask how much juice has he drank and all that stuff. Right. And I didn't even know. Now, if they said, well, what's his stool been like? I'm like, ooh, I think the preschool changes most of the poopy diapers now. Like I'm not in it anymore, and I can't really. And that's 5 days a week. I'm like, oh, does that make me a bad parent? Like, because I don't think so.
That's your kid's schedule,
right?
You know? Like, sadly, my kid looks at me. He's like, okay, now I'm ready. Like, he's got this fear thing. I can be with you now. Okay, come on in. Boom, I gotta go potty. Let's go.
Let's make it happen.
I'm like, yeah, I'll be outside. No, daddy, you can please be with me.
No, you're gonna want to see this. You're gonna want to.
But he's
see
like,
this.
Don't talk. Don't make any noise.
listener Chris, the guy who puts up a ton of pictures of funny stuff on the Facebook page, he just sent me a tweet the other day that his son took a dump and then called him in to see it.
He was like, oh, I get that all the time.
Like, he goes, look at how big this is, Dad. Like,
he's so proud.
Yeah, my son is always he is the guy who reads a magazine. That's who he's going to be. Like, I talked to him about this.
He does that too. He does gets that Lego magazine,
and he just looks through it.
In the mail, and he just sits there and he kind of goes through it and looks at it, and he figures out some of the words. Like, he's starting to read a little bit, which is another pretty crazy thing that happened one day. And so he likes figuring it out to a point, and then he's just like, you know, read it to me. But he also just likes looking at the Lego stuff. But he'll sit on there forever, you know, he'll finish and just be like, well, no, I'm not done the magazine.
I wish he would just read, because my son will sit there literally for 20 minutes taking a shit. And then he gets upset because the poop dries to his ass. Like, and he's like, I can't get it off. And he's like freaking out. And I was like, and it's hard. Like, it's just a weird that everybody goes through it. That weird thing that you're like, when I imagined being a parent, this was nowhere near the spectrum of what I was, not even in the ballpark on the planet of what I thought I was going to be doing. It's saying, explaining, son, you have to poop faster and wipe your ass so it doesn't dry. This is insane. That my favorite line I've said to him was that I go, taking a crap should be just a secondary thing. You do it every day. It should not be an emotional experience, son. It should not, good or bad. You know what I mean?
It should, like, what does that mean?
Yeah, exactly. That is what it is.
Everything I do is an emotional experience.
It's true. This is what it is to be my son. I'm like a Vulcan father. Like nothing. Nothing is emotional. It is just get it in, get it done, move on. Check it off the list. Damn it. We have to get shit done. Oh my God, it's so
frustrating.
That is
his house 100%. My son could eat for an hour and a half. Just sits there, and I'm like, you got to finish. And I don't want to take the food away from him because it's important that he eats his healthy meals when he does and sits down, that kind of stuff. But I'm also like, if I'm here for 45 minutes waiting for you to stuff that thing in your mouth, like, I'm done. Let's go. My wife leaves the table. She's like, well, okay, I got stuff to do. See ya.
See you later. Yeah, my wife won't let him sit, and like, because here's what I would do. I would just let him sit and eat at the table for us. But my wife feels weird about letting him sit at the table and eating by himself. Like, she's like, I think it's because her mom wasn't that invested in her as a kid. So she's overcompensating a little bit, which is fine. I don't care. But yeah, it's this again, to go back to what I was saying. That's not what I thought it was going to be. Like, for me, the frustration I'm always dealing with is that I'll make some chicken breasts and some cantaloupe and some steamed vegetables and put it on a plate. And then, you know, they're kind of nitpicking at it. And then eventually there comes the beginning of the negotiation at dinner. My wife is big on desserts. Her philosophy is that if you have desserts available all the time, then they don't become a thing where, you know, the kids obsess over them. And I'm like, okay, I'll buy into it because I cannot just eat two cookies. And it's probably because, not that my dad was a health food nut, but it was just never in the house. And if it was, my dad wolfed it down before anybody could ever touch it. So It's like I'm a puppy in a litter, and I have to get my cookies in psychologically. So it frustrates me because then all of a sudden it's like, well, okay, how many more bites of chicken before I can have a treat? Like, let's just barely skate in.
Right.
I need a C grade on protein intake in order to be able to get and then I'll eat 8 cookies, like, without even glancing at it.
Right. And it's, you know, like, what is, I always say, just a few more bites. What's a few?
Right.
You know, I was like, listen, I'll tell you when you're done.
Exactly. But then that's not enough.
I'll tell you when you're done. Keep going.
But and then I started doing a thing like Dr. Jay suggested, where you just, it's everything is very, very small portions. And like most things in parenting, you start something that works, and then without even thinking about it, you kind of accidentally phase out of it. and then all of a sudden now I'm having a conversation with you from across the country, and I'm like, holy fuck, no wonder I'm having this problem. It's because I'm still like, I'm giving him too much. Like, it just, you stop thinking about the minutia of it all. And then I get wrapped up in the fact that it's like, why? And then I watch him. I angrily watch him eat, you know, chocolate covered graham crackers going, why can't that be chicken? It's not like I don't make them eat shit food. Like, my mom was a good cook, but there was a lot of shitty things coming out of that oven. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, and not just shitty things. I'm not saying shitty things as far as she was a horrible cook. I'm saying shitty things for a toddler age kid to have to eat, you know, shit like oysters and stuff like that, you know, that she would occasionally make. I'm making everything that they like all the fucking time.
Right.
I mean, and then the lunches. Now I'm getting too wrapped up on food.
Oh, don't even start with lunches. The nap time ladies did a thing about varying the lunch thing, and I tried that for a couple of weeks, and I was just like, look, he's just getting a sandwich and some kind of snack, and it, you know, it's. And we have this thing at the school where they say this is the public school in the afternoon. Only send healthy snacks.
Yes.
So we only send healthy snacks, but, you know, and this goes to your whole Easter egg thing that happened to you a while back. But for some reason, this kid gets more crap candy coming home in the course of this year than I know what to do with.
Right.
Like, since October, we've had candy in this house because of his afternoon public school.
Yep.
It's Halloween. And then after Halloween, it's for some reason at Thanksgiving, they need candy because, you know. And then, of course, Christmas is loaded with candy. And then not long behind Christmas is Valentine's Day, which is loaded with candy. And, you know, I don't even know what the last one was where they had it. And then every kid has a birthday where the parents also – oh, Easter, right, where, you know, where we started talking about this. You know, all the kids have birthdays, and they're supposed to give goodie bags of candy to all the kids. It's absolutely insane how much junk food is coming out of the school. And I'm like, oh, this is why you send them to school with a good snack, because
they're the ones giving them the crap.
Right, exactly. Look, let us do this.
Yes.
And, you know, and they take every holiday over so much. My son, actually, by the time we got to Halloween, was like, oh, do I have to wear this costume again? And then we got to Christmas, and he goes, I feel like I've been opening presents all month long. And I'm like, well, then in that case, I'm not buying them anymore.
Yeah, exactly. How do you not hate him? How do you not?
You don't need any. And then the one school said, Santa's going to come visit. All right. So I'm like, okay, great. Santa's going to come visit. Like, you know, we'll play along there. Send a wrapped gift from Santa. I was like, whoa, wait. What am I supposed to do? You know, I actually texted the teacher. I was like, what? I don't understand this. You need to go get a gift for your son that Santa would get, wrap it so that Santa, when he comes, can give it to your son.
What the hell?
I'm like, well, that's what Christmas morning's for.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, well, you know, because he's coming and we want everyone to get a gift. I'm like, you know, now we do this thing where there's Santa paper and there's the family paper. Like, it's just this whole, like, let's see how big of a lie we can make.
Yep.
And so I got to run out and get the Santa paper, which is supposed to be agreed upon by us. You know, like, for some reason, this is the, you know, are the bills paid and is the Santa paper agreeable to both mom and dad? And, you know, so I run out, get the Santa paper. I'm like, this is going to be it. Like, fine. And my wife's like, well, you, I hope you got enough rolls because, you know, we need enough for all the presents that we get. You know, it's just. And I wrap this thing up and I give, you know, go through this whole thing, and we get to Christmas morning, and he, you know, he said, I feel like I've been opening presents all month. And he goes, well, I already got my present from Santa. I'm like, you know what? This kid thought that he was going to get one present from Santa. We were good.
Yeah.
We were in the clear.
We had it on lockdown.
It was it. And we blew it. We blew it. But the school took everything. You know, like Easter egg, they dyed the Easter eggs. We had to do the same thing.
Yeah, you can't. You gotta do candy canes. Santa's gotta do candy canes. That's what I think. Not gifts. Oh, did I lose you? Are you still there? Hold on, I'm gonna hit pause.
Okay.
All right, so where was back. I? We lost. I heard the whole thing. What I was saying is that I think Santa has to do candy canes at the school. He can't.
Yeah.
He can't do full blown presents because. And I get it, but here's what it is. This has to be somebody in charge on some level high enough that says that, you know, that felt like they didn't get any presents for Christmas. And so for them, Christmas has become all about presents. Like, I didn't even come from a religious family, but there was a time where Christmas was all about presents. And then my dad got super broke because he had a contracting business and he got sued, kind of, where he was a maintenance landscaper and he got his first commercial shopping center. And this was huge for his small business. He was like, we've arrived. We're doing it. And then there was like an open field across the way and gophers would come out of the open field, cross the street in the middle of the night and were burrowing in the landscaping that he was doing and eating the roots on these palm trees that he was buying because the name of the shopping center was Galleria Palms in Modesto. And so
I want you to kill all the gophers.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what he was doing at night. He was like going there with his guys and setting traps to try because I don't know, but some kind of terms, I think if you're a contractor in landscaping, is that the plant life has to stay alive for at least, I think, 6 months after you've finished the job. So these palm trees kept dying and then he would have to go buy another one and replace them. They were like $200 a pop. And so he ate up all the money that he made on this gig. And then the nursery came after him for the remainder of the money and he had to kind of like file bankruptcy and give him what he had left. And so then we had no money for Christmas that year. And then it became where it was like, it's not about the gifts. It's about just us getting together. And it was such a better experience all around. Like I remember as a kid, that first, you know, few broke Christmases we had. And to this day, they're some of the coolest presents that I've gotten. I mean, it's nice. And now we just have a thing where just the kids get stuff. And so my point is,
you're gone again.
Oh, damn Skype. Damn you, Skype.
You there?
My point is that you just need to be able to give the kid a candy cane. Stop worrying about presents. It's not that big a deal, you know?
Yeah. I don't know what they're doing at that school. It's it's a crazy thing. We have to do fundraisers. Do you have to do this for your school?
No.
Fundraisers?
No.
My kid's supposed to do fundraisers. Same line along the lines of the projects.
Yeah.
You know. Really, my kid's going to fundraise something. He's going to go sell something.
Yeah.
You know, and one of them is Yankee Candles, which was, I think, a company invented just for the re-gifting purposes. Like, no one wants to buy a Yankee Candle.
No.
So I went and said, look, I'd like to buy out of the fundraiser. I'm going to give you the cash value of everything you want my son to raise. Can we do that? Oh, they looked at me like I was insane.
Right. Well,
but we have fundraising. It's like, right, but you're only getting a percentage of
– right.
What we're buying that we don't need from this Cherrydale and Yankee Candle. So why don't you just take my cash and it'll go towards everything that we want to do?
Yep.
All right. Well, I don't know if we can do that because it's the Home and School Association, which I don't know why they can't call PTA anymore. They wouldn't be able to take the cash. It has to be done through fundraising. So, and then at the end of this, you know, because everyone's supposed to fundraise a certain amount, they said, well, you know, all of this money that you fundraise helps fund their school trip. Now, the school trip this year for pre-K and every year since time ad nauseum, I went to this school and we went on this trip, is Storybook Land. It's like a little fantasy land, kind of like, you know, backwoods Disney kind of thing. And they take the kids there. Well, this year they said, well, we can't do that. Some things happened. We had some curriculum changes and we're going to take them to Home Depot.
Wow.
For a scavenger hunt and then a craft.
But it's
so I actually called the principal because I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Like, my kid has spent every 3 days in Home Depot.
Yeah.
since the storm, and he thinks it's like, you know, more bad news. My kid was under the sink the other day and was like, still good, Dad, no leaks. Like, he is dialed in on, like, what's going on with this house. I was like, he does not need to go to Home Depot.
How old is
so
your son
I actually
again?
Called, and I was like, why is this? And she goes, well, we're doing some curriculum changes. I said, well, wait, then that means that the curriculum changes are that you are planning on having my child swinging a hammer in 20 years. Yep. Like, I have no idea where we went from Storybook Land, which is basically, you know, fairy tales and stories, and there's rides and all that kind of stuff, to he's got to go to the Home Depot and do a scavenger hunt and a craft. I'm like, and if you want to make this real, they should do the scavenger hunt. They should come get it, try to fit it into the craft for 2 hours, and then be told, no, that's the wrong one. You have to go back and get the right part. Let's do this for real now. And they were not at all amused at my comment. I said, here's the thing. He was fundraising to go to Storybook Land. Now he's going to Home Depot. Yep. I offered you cash. We're not fundraising at all next year. Because this is crap.
Well, and it's such horseshit that you can't just give them the money. Like, this is the society we've crafted for ourselves that, like, I can understand. You're not a politician who's got, you know, big oil in his back pocket.
Right, exactly.
You're just a dad who's like, listen, I have to jack up my house 6 feet in the next, you know, 10 years, whatever. I don't have fucking time to go stand next to the, you know, the grocery store and hound people to buy candles or candy bars for 4 hours a day. Because guess what? When I come home from working after building a fucking boat for some rich asshole who doesn't like the price I gave him, you know what I want to do? I want to sit down and just wrestle with my kid or just hug my wife on the couch and watch some horrible television like The Bachelorette because that's what she likes to watch. I don't want to fucking sit and spend my evenings so that you can take my kid to some bullshit storyland when he's spending most of his time watching WALL-E and I'm answering questions about the demise of our planet. That's what my life is, bitch.
Can you come to our school meeting next week?
I would gladly come in as, oh, that's a great service. Maybe that's what I do to get off the road. Instead of going on the road for 5 days at a time, I blow into town for just one day. And I go to all of the PTA meetings, and I'm just like, I'm the new dad, you know, like some kind of
professional bullshit caller.
Exactly. Like, I just come in. Nobody knows who I am, why I'm there. I pay my $3 dues, and I come in and go, all right, let me tell you something, Janine, about what you're doing wrong. And I just let fucking Janine have it. I say, you know, first of all, you bring these bullshit snickerdoodle cookies, okay? That's a lure. Don't think I don't know what these are. That's your way of getting my fat ass in the door so then you could get me selling Yankee candles. I got a fucking idea. Let's get a Kickstarter going. How about this? I'll go to a fucking Cracker Barrel and buy 6 Yankee candles, and we'll auction them off, and everybody can pay what they want. It's still the same fucking thing, only now I could do what I want to do is just write a check to help you educate my kid, because I don't know if you understand this, Janine, but this is outsourcing. You see, I have parenting happening, and I can't parent 24/7 because that's just not the lifestyle I live. So I outsource it to you, Janine, and I rely on you to figure shit out. So when you come back to me with more problems beyond, hey, I need you to do this half a sheet of multiplication tables with your kid after dinner tonight, then I'm going to lose my fucking mind, okay?
I'm going to go in and look like John Cusack and say anything with a boombox. And exactly that.
Oh, that's even easier. That's even easier. I could just lay down a track.
That's right.
I could lay down a track, and then I could just leave gaps where you could be like, Susan, instead of Janine. You're like...
Perfect.
Listen, Susan, and your fucking blonde hair is driving me up a wall. I hate your chocolate chip cookies.
And it really is like, when are they ever, you know, like, with all the stuff that's going on, I'm like, when are you ever actually taking time to teach this kid anything?
Right.
Because it's so logistically nightmarish.
Yeah.
To get all this stuff. And a kid is in pre-K. It's like, we have to get it in his bag, and then he has to be told what, you know, and trying to get him to tell me anything about the details of what they said, because they don't write them clearly.
No.
It's like, when is this due? I don't know. Well, what did your teacher say when it was due? You could email her.
You can email her. You know, yeah, my preschool teacher wants me to text her. I'm like, no, fuck. Again, it's outsourcing. You see, I pay my money. This is what the way I see it. I pay my money so that you can handle this stuff. Now, you can look at me and say that makes me a bad fucking father all you want. I don't give a shit. All I want you to do is get it fucking done. That's what I need you to do.
And if you need my help, like, let me know, and I am there 100%.
Right. I will chaperone. Like, I will, yeah, and... But yeah, there needs to be. It just seems like there's these moments where it the needle pushes too far in the other direction. And here's how I know that it's true is because you and I would not be having this conversation literally living on opposite sides of the coast if this weren't an issue, right? Like you would be sitting here listening to me like, well, that's because you live in Southern California. Like that's why.
And those people, we know how they are.
Yeah, they're all assholes over there. You fucking hippies in your PC ways. Like, I mean, come on. I don't even know my kid's teacher's name out here. Like,
right. Jeeves picks him up at some time of the day and I don't know, does something with him until bedtime. I pat him on the head.
And... Yeah, I rustle his hair and kiss him on the forehead goodnight. I don't know.
That's right.
Jeeves tells me what his birthday is. It's a great life out here.
That's right. And then we all go to the beach on the sunny days.
Right. And that's why I know I've beat it to death, but that's what really ultimately frustrates me about these projects is that, like, here's the thing. I get the intention, and I support the intention. It's like, let's push our kids. Let's get them to be a little bit more advanced. But let me tell you something, you fucking assholes at preschools. You don't jump ahead. You see, you don't just say, okay, you have to lay the brick behind. It's not like you just find the pot
it's
of gold.
It's called scaffolding in education.
Right. You build. Thank you. There we go. I like it. A construction analogy I can get behind. You don't just build the support beams that go up to the third floor on a place. There's got to be other support structures and cross beams and diagonals that got to go in to keep it square, keep it solid, so that when you're standing on the top of that third story, it's not fucking wobbling in the wind on you. Because then you don't have anything to
turn around so much that I'm sending you the eggs that you're going to die with my child.
Yeah, exactly. Why?
And I'm doing the friggin' school project with him. Like, why don't you do the school project with him in school? I'll dye the eggs, and we'll have holidays at home, and you can teach in school. What do you say?
Unbelievably solid point, Mr. Hewitt. Unbefucking believably. Like, why are they the ones doing all the fun shit? Why are you taking pictures of my kid opening a present with fucking Santa Claus? That should be my goddamn gig. I take him to a mall, I go to Toys R Us, I pick something up. It's a magical moment for me to dye fucking Easter eggs. I don't even know who Jesus's middle name is, but still, that should be me, you motherfucker.
It's H something, I think.
Oh, outstanding. Outstanding, Mr. Hugh. Let's wrap it up and do some moments of the week. Does that sound fun to you, good sir?
Sure. I got to give you two if that's absolutely okay.
Of course it's okay. Yes, okay. Please do.
Because I had one I didn't even know what to do with. Go ahead.
Listen, let's double down. Let's do it right.
All right.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the week brought to you by Stitcher, the free app that handles all your podcasting needs without having to sync to your computer. Stream all your favorite podcasts right to your Droid, BlackBerry, or iPhone. Just go to thedadpodcast.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the left-hand side. It's free, people, and they give us money if you do it.
So, my moments of the week have been that my kids have... It's really kind of weird and narcissistic, but... I've been listening to myself do this radio show when I pick them up from school and we'll drive around in the car. And my kids love this music. It's a weird, weird thing for them to all of a sudden, like we have this weird kindred thing that now we start to enjoy it. So they love Imagine Dragons. I don't know if you're an alternative rock fan or even know any of these bands or whatever, but they have a few good songs. One of them is Radioactive and Demons is good. On Top of the World is now in like every trailer that you're seeing for anybody under the age of 10. And so I play them and then I found some other ones, Panic the Disco in the Disco. This is Gospel is another great song that they both love. And then American Author is The Best Day of My Life, which is another like popular trailer song, I think, right now.
Right.
And so we listen to it and it's all of us like singing along. But my kids like get into it, especially with Radioactive. They're like, Radioactive. And it's funny because my wife made a video and I'll try and get it off her phone and see if I can't post it on Facebook. I haven't seen it, but I could kind of see it. It's funny. They'll be singing a song and they bob their heads and they're doing like facial expressions, like acting them out and stuff like that in the back of the minivan. And my wife always says, "Justin, look, I'm driving a car, bitch. Like, what do you like? I can't just stare at them. Let's reassess our priorities. Like,
break every law in the book, right? And look like, at this.
Because I try
your seatbelt.
All I have is that fisheye rear view mirror where it lets you see the whole back car. So I'm trying to see that, but you can't really see because you're trying to see a 2-year-old's facial expressions while he's singing the song. And I don't know. Then we play it in the house and they walk around. And so it's just a fun thing for me. That they listen to it and really like it on the same level that I do, I guess. It was cool. So now you go twice.
Okay. The first is, you know, my wife is a teacher. I was a teacher. So like our son has been learning to read for a while now, and he's really starting to figure it out and kind of form words and all that. And I was in the store with him the other day and in a bit of a long line behind somebody checking out, and we're sitting there and he's just staring at the magazines and I'm not really paying attention to what he's looking at. And he suddenly turns to me with a ton of people around and goes, "Daddy, what is break bed sex?"
How old is he?
He's 5.
That's awesome. Where the hell were you?
And I go look, and it's, I don't know what it is. It's like Cosmopolitan or one of those magazines where it says, like, it, you know, have break bed sex.
Yeah. Yes.
And I was like,
Cindy Teigen
awesome
or whatever.
Buddy. But we don't know anybody that would even want to break their bed.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you about the rest of it some other time. But I was just like, awesome, the kid's reading. And then it just gave me that insight into, I got to figure this out for the next, I don't know when I'm going to have, like, I'll give him the birds and bees talk whenever. I don't care about that. But bobbing and weaving through all the things that he can now read, I just see this long road of, oh, boy, here we go.
Yeah.
This is going to be something else.
That's awesome.
But it was hilarious. What is break bed sex?
That is so...
Nothing I've ever had, kid.
Just, it was... That's what my mind went, that it's like, even if you did explain it to him, it's like, that's early on to have that bar set really high. You know what I mean? Like,
right, exactly.
You want him to find out about break bed sex and how unattainable it is when he's in his mid-30s, like a normal person.
Right.
Not at 5.
By then, he'll be like, you know what? We don't want to do that because we can't afford a new bed anyway. So.
Exactly. And you don't want him to
not
be...
not even a desirable outcome.
You don't want him to enter in his teenage years, you know what I mean? Thinking like, you know, because I don't know. Maybe you do. He does it the right way, you know, and he waits until he gets married. But God forbid he's, you know, 17 years old, whatever it is you prefer for him to first experience the joys of a lady. And and he's like, I'm going to break your bed. And it's like, easy, Skipper. Remember what we talked about with Janine and the preschool? Like, let's build your scaffolding. All right. Let's shoot for 15 minutes out of the gate. Because you're not going to break a bed in less than 10. Okay, buddy. That's not even on the, you want to hear it. This is a book by Sting. I want you to check it out. It's going to be a lot of deep breathing and you're just going to be standing still a lot, which I think is bullshit, but that's not a topic for moment of the week. Oh, that's great, Tom. But, all right, what's your other one?
My other one actually is from moment of the week thing. He was doing something and I was trying to get him ready for school one morning and he was just being a piss and I couldn't do anything. And I was like, dude, just get your shoes on. I'm not asking for a moment of the week here. And he eventually got his shoes on and we got in the car and we're going along and the way the kids go back to stuff, he goes, "Daddy, what is a moment of the week?" So I explained it to him. I said, you know, I listened to this podcast and they talk about how they, like, a time when they really connected with their kids and you know, it kind of makes them feel good about being a parent. And, you know, he was like, oh, okay, good enough answer. Fast forward a few weeks later and I'm trying to get him ready for school and, you know, he's doing the same kind of stuff running around and I realized I forgot something. So I went to like back to the door to grab it. And instead of just opening the door, I just did this face plant on the door because it was already closed and I thought it was open.
Oh.
And fell back and landed on the ground. And it was a complete wipeout. My son goes over me, looks down, and he goes, "That was definitely not a moment of the week.
God, I'm a huge
fan. And I
fan
just like I
kid.
Grabbed them and I pulled them down on the ground with me and I hugged them. I was like, "You just made it, one buddy."
That's incredible. That is.
But
that
it was weeks later. We never talked about it at all. He's just like, "That was not."
Oh, they're such fucking sponges. It's so so
it's
awesome.
Fantastic.
Oh, that is incredible. That's I like the way you painted the picture because I could see it almost like a movie where the you know he just looks over and then right down into the camera lens that is your face like he's looking right. Straight down. That is definitely not it. Well, that was the show. Send us an email to show@thedadpodcast.com. Don't forget to like us on facebook.com/dadpodcast. Follow the show on Twitter @dadpodcast. Me on Twitter @JustinWorsham. Do you have a website or something? Like, what if somebody on the East Coast wants to get a boat fixed? And then, but here's the deal. If you find out about Tom from this show, you cannot hassle him about prices. That's the only
I usually do, like I said, I do everything handshake. I have an email. It's HEWITTT@AOL.com.
All right.
And I take all my business stuff there.
All right. Well, if you got a boat,
it's three T's. It's a little tricky.
Or if you just want to pay him to go out and have lunch and tell you stories, then please hit him up on email.
That'd be great.
Right? You'd be like Kim Kardashian.
Why not?
Don't forget to check out Justin is Married, Booker is Single. It's available on Stitcher and on iTunes. It's another show I do with Chris Booker, a radio guy out here. He's in his early 40s, not married, has a very young girlfriend, is on the fence about having kids and moving his life forward, even though he's almost middle-aged. And I am 35 and have two children living in the suburbs of Los Angeles. So, and it's a great show. It's a lot of fun. A lot of people. I really appreciate a lot of you guys that listen to this show have come over and talked about how great it is. One of the most interesting pieces of feedback that I got on it was that somebody said what they like is that it's the same kind of co-host every time, and they like the idea of having like a chemistry with somebody, which I was like, oh, I go, that's interesting. So maybe I need to shorten the rotation of the, is this an awkward conversation for me to have on the show with you right here, Tom Scott?
Not at all.
I'm saying I was like, maybe I need to shorten like the list of people that I rotate through. Trust
right.
me.
We'll chop you're on the Hewitt short list first. And,
yeah, you're cut, Tom. You're out. But thank you for all your support.
It was nice knowing y'all. Take care. I'll still listen, still support the show because everybody should.
No, Tom, I'm a huge fan. I wish that you did not live across the coast. We should get together sometime. You're good people and good times, as always. But enough of me kissing Tom's ass. You guys get enough of that just in the hour that we talk. But please go to thedadpodcast.com, become a paid subscriber for just $24 a year. You could change my life and make me stop doing free radio jobs that suck me away from my family. No, I'm fine. That was all in jest. Anyway. On behalf of my good friend Tom Hewitt, this is Justin Worship saying, stay frosty.